Welcome to the Hobos Collective. I am your host, Logar the Barbarian. I'm joined today with my co-host today,
the Blue Wizard.
Oh my, that's quite over the top, my friend. And we have a couple guests with us, and we're going to talk about games, role-playing games. If you're tuning into this new and you've not really been familiar with role-playing games, or like Dungeons & Dragons, is a role-playing game. But the games we're going to look at today are more along the lines of superhero games, where you pretend to be superheroes, imagine to be, and science fiction games. So this will be interesting. We have two creators here with us today. Wythe Marshall, he is the creator of a game called Stillfleet. There's something new going on with that here coming up soon. And then Christian Kessler, he's, like me, is a civilian. And I appreciate that. Welcome.
Hey, how are you?
I'm well. How are y'all doing?
Good.
Excellent. So is there anything going on in the world of gaming or in your world of gaming that we might want to talk about real quick before we really get into things?
Well, I could mention that I just on this past Sunday started a new campaign of Delta Green.
Oh, did
which,
you?
Yeah, it's kind of a modern Call of Cthulhu spinoff for people that don't know about it.
Yeah, Light's been wanting to run that and play that for a minute. We've talked a lot about playing it. How is it?
It's great. I'm only playing a character. A friend of mine is running the game, but we just started up. I'm playing somebody who was a Coast Guard. He was a coastie, and then retired from the Coast Guard and spent like 6 months living on a boat before he encountered Dagon and got brought into Delta Green. So.
Oh, no. I appreciate it. I was stationed with some coasties for a while out there in Fort Meade, Maryland for a minute. And oddly enough, the coasties were some of the few folks I was stationed with that I played D&D with.
Nice.
I think that, Logar, I think you spoke to my friend Jarrett Crater recently.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so I'm really excited about the first wave of Sphinx scenes coming out from his new deal.
It's Space Penguin Inc., correct?
Right. Inc. with a K.
Yes, I made that mistake at first.
What is that?
It's a new publisher that's forming. It's really creator-friendly in some ways that I don't know if I'm supposed to get into out here, but just in terms of like royalties and things like that and creative freedom. Yeah, it's. I'm pretty excited about it. I've got development credits on one of the zines coming out, The Garden of Corda. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple for Mothership. There's one for DCC and D&D. It's going to be cool.
Excellent. It is going to be some exciting stuff coming out of there. I know some folks who are, we spoke to some folks who are putting some stuff out over there, some folks that are on here regularly. So we're excited to see what they put out over there.
And that was Space Penguin Inc.
Right.
Space Penguin Inc. Okay. Got to check them out. Yeah. I mean, we're a small studio. So my friends and I, you know, Stillfleet Studio, we make a couple fantasy games, and we have our sort of sci-fi detective Cold War setting coming out for Stillfleet, which is the big thing we're doing. But something else we've been doing is more streaming games. So if you go to youtube.com/@Stillfleet, you know, we have some videos up of us, of some of our players who are really great, you know, streaming a double venture. We've been doing a sort of spy versus spy story where there's three players and they don't know what's happening, with the three players sent to stop their mission. And so we record them on and off, and that's kind of fun to just keep juggling with different GMs. So we're trying to sort of experiment with more like that to get people to be aware of really the system. Mm-hmm. And just have a lot of fun. I think, you know, we play so many games on Discord, but I think, you know, we're all a little shy just being a little older with like this wacky technology of streaming, but, and there's a lot of people who love that stuff and that they'll tune in. So it's a great way to just kind of show off like what you're up to.
I've got to be honest, when it comes to the streaming games, I have really had a hard time tuning into one. I think I need to tune into more. Every now and then I try to, I've thought about trying to stream a game, but I don't think I would be suited for that.
You'd be great, man. You'd be great. You should come play Stillfleet with us, you know.
I think that I'm a little too I DM best at a table. because I am, I don't know, David, do I have a style of DMing or something that you would say, or no?
It comes across a lot of times as kind of seat of the pants, even though I know you do a lot of planning.
I mean, there's also a lot of seat of the pants most of the time as well.
Well, that's DMing, right?
Yeah.
Well, let's move on. First project we're going to talk about is called Long Shot City. Christian, what can you tell us about Long Shot City?
Okay, so Long Shot City is a superhero RPG. The rule set is based on Troika, and it's going to be published by the same publisher as Troika. It is a standalone game, though. So all the Troika rules are like reprinted and slightly adapted to fit the new setting and everything.
I've got a question. I ran Troika a couple times, and I'm drawing a blank a little bit on the mechanics because it's been about 2 years. But my question was, like, as a superhero game, I expect powers, like superpowers and stuff like that.
Right.
And I'm curious how you approach that in the game, doing a Troika style superhero game.
So the way that Troika traditionally works, with, you know, magic and spell casting and everything, is it just has an associated stamina cost with every spell.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty easy for the most part to just translate over to superpowers. The only exceptions are things like fast healing. Obviously, it doesn't make sense to spend stamina to get it back.
Mm-hmm.
So I just, you know, found other ways to limit that and, like, make it so that you can't spam that and also attack every round and stuff like that.
Why did you decide to do superheroes in the style of Troika? Why was that what was it that kind of prompted that?
Well, when I was working on the layout for the Troika Numinous edition,
mm-hmm.
and then just playing a lot of the game over the course of the next couple of years, I realized the way the skill systems work, the party balance doesn't really matter. Like, no one really overshadows anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day I just got to thinking of, you know, how Superman and Batman are always on a team, and that's kind of dumb unless one of your players is just an absolute genius. Right? So yeah, just using Troika for that goes a long way to dealing with that, I think.
That's great. Because it is, I mean, it is kind of a thing, and I've played some, and Troika is a game that's been on my stack for a long time to check out. I've read it multiple times. I've never had a chance to actually play it. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you all know how that goes.
Right.
But, I've also had an idea for a superhero campaign kicking around in my head for a while. So
Red.
This might be a beautiful opportunity when this comes out for me.
Yeah.
What's the campaign, Blue Wizard?
You can call me Blue. Mr. Wizard was my dad.
Blue. Mr. Wizard. I'll do that. We got to work this out. I'm curious to know a little bit about the superhero campaign you're looking to do.
Oh, well, that would be spoilers.
Oh! I'm excited.
Well, Troika is really, really easy to write for.
Mm-hmm.
Just in general. Adventures, enemies, new backgrounds, like archetypes for your characters. So, yeah, that should be pretty easy for you.
Oh, wow. I should have grabbed the Troika book before I came over here. There are some interesting characters. So I want to talk about what Troika is, because if you're not familiar with what Troika is, a lot of this conversation doesn't make much sense. It's a fantasy role-playing game. It's kind of rules light. But when it comes to, like, the kinds of classes is always kind of where it stood out to me, because the classes are very unique.
Yeah.
I mean, can someone expand on that?
The first class I played as was a monkey monger, which meant that I had, like, 5 monkeys that were following me around and just, like, getting into trouble. Jarrett Crater was running it at the time, and I, like, kept... the reason there is a D6 table for what the monkeys are doing at any random point in time is because we were playing it while we were still working on it. And I kept just annoying the shit out of him by asking what the monkeys are doing, like, every 5 minutes.
I ran it twice, or maybe it was once. And we had an interesting collection of characters. One of Light played three kittens in a raincoat or something like that, or three. I think they were cats. Three cats in a raincoat.
Yeah, there's a lot of goofy stuff like that. It's a lot of fun that way. It really just like lets, I don't know, it gives people permission to goof off.
Mm-hmm. And that is, there's sort of a what's the word I'm looking for? Within superheroes, I'm curious as to where you started taking that with the classes.
You kind of can't get away with not including the basic archetypes, you know, mm-hmm. your guys with laser eyes and your teleporters, mm-hmm. like that. Around the edges of that, though, I threw in some other archetypes that are a little bit, they're from superhero comics, but they're not the things you would go to. So, for example, like, you wouldn't think of, like, Jimmy Olsen as being super fucking useful, but one of the first I wrote was the Ace Reporter. Basically, all your skills are, they're things like lockpicking and interrogation that are, like, just designed to get you into trouble, right?
Yeah.
And your special ability is that if you've been captured, you can roll a luck test to determine if the villain spills their whole plan to you, like while they're waiting for you to die.
I really like that. I think that's cool because there's I was always a fan of playing I played a lot of Palladium, and I was a fan of playing underpowered characters and stuff like that. Oh. Weird little things that they came out with that a lot of people found useless. I was going to be the scholar. I'm definitely, David, we're definitely going to have to, or Blue, we're definitely going to have to check this out. I was really good at never calling Light by his name on the podcast, and when I did, I edited it out, so. All right, I'm gonna try to make a shift here, and we're going to move over from superheroes. One of the first games I got into as a kid growing up was Heroes Unlimited, and that was like, we played that all the time. So here, superhero games have, I didn't play D&D until years after I had been playing Palladium games and stuff, and Heroes Unlimited was like that number one. So when it comes to like some of my favorite games to play, superhero games are there. But I played a lot of sci-fi games then too. My first game was Doctor Who, so we're gonna make the shift from superhero to sci-fi, and I think it's appropriate that this episode has sci-fi and superhero role-playing games on it, being like kind of the first official of the Hobos Collective.
Well, thanks a lot for having us on. I also think, you know, Troika is really great, weird, innovative rules and cosmic fantasy, and I think that's something that, again, you know, I think Stillfleet, I'd like to think we do well, it also is coming up with interesting mechanics for really fun characters that allow you to goof off. Although we do have that edge of trying to be kind of a political, kind of a lefty game. So we're, it's a little more simulationist than Troika in that sense, but you could definitely be, somebody with a bunch of monkeys to sell. And you know, I think superheroes, isn't that interesting? It's kind of like an orientation to the world. Like in any game, you could be like, I'm going to be a vigilante, who like does justice stuff, with my fists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. There's rules to like adapt Longshot City characters over to the you know, any other Troika game. There's also like an essay basically about how superhero genre is really just a collection of like every other genre in the world. Right.
Yeah. There's a lot of sci-fi in superheroes. Generally nowadays, it's the modern superhero genres, I feel like that's a lot of sci-fi explanations for stuff, but they take it in this kind of almost like a little kid direction of like, there's right and wrong, and there's clear right, clear wrong. So I think you could play, you could play our game in that register and just, you know, not have murky, gray, gritty, real politics. You could just have like supervillains and go, you know, mess them up.
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, even, you know, Dungeons and Dragons is a superhero game just in a fantasy trope.
Right, right.
Yeah. Conan has Marvel comics. Conan is currently running wild through the Marvel universe in the set.
That's true, yeah.
Really? Oh, yeah. I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah, superheroes, when I was growing up, there was a very heavy sci-fi element to a lot of them, but like you said, they see like you got New Gods and things right. like that, and the Thor stuff, where they lean into old myth and godhood and very fantasy oriented stuff. Yeah, there's definitely a very mixed lot.
There's also a really one really political sci-fi character in Longshot City who's he's kind of a cross between like Lex Luthor and Kang at the same time in the way you actually interact with him. He owns half the fucking world, you know? And this is because he's a time traveler who he escaped the Battle of Gettysburg by stealing a tourist time gauntlet as a Confederate cavalry officer. So yeah, he's just a total piece of shit.
That's a great character idea. Yeah, and that feels very Stillfleet, you know, by segue. I mean, I haven't Christian played your stuff, but yeah,
when this episode drops, which is we're trying to record about 2 weeks out, but when this episode drops, both of these should be live on Kickstarter, correct?
Yep.
Yeah,
and we'll, if you check, we're gonna have a post up on the site. We'll make sure we have links that you can follow to everything. You'll be able to find Stillfleet, you'll be able to find the Kickstarter, all that stuff. We're gonna make sure we have a link to everything there, so just go check it out. So Stillfleet, what is coming out new for Stillfleet now? What are you working on?
Yeah, well, so we, you know, last year had a successful launch for our core rulebook, which, so the game's set far in the future, and the idea is there's basically a greedy evil company that everybody works for in space that controls these time space gates called Stiffworks that let you go to different worlds. So it has a sort of cosmic fantasy element. There's certainly, you know, unimaginable sci-fi stuff like these gates, but really the game is focused on workers and, you know, being a laborer in a capitalist situation where you're not really in control. You don't really like your bosses, you're very suspicious, but you're an elite mercenary, whatever, you're a sort of D&D-esque character, Troika-esque character, you have powers. And so the plots, you know, we run a lot of games where essentially you're sent on a job, but there's something they're not telling you about the nature of the job. There's some moral quandary. And then of course there's a lot of random, you know, you could get real crazy with random encounters and run it as essentially, you know, dungeon crawls in space. And we've been working on the game forever. It's got a unique mechanical system, so your scores are dice. And a lot of people like it, and it's been featured on some real play podcasts and whatnot. But one element that a lot of the people who play the game and I were really interested in is how do you avoid sort of murder hobo combat and just killing stuff as the answer. Right. Like if it's killing the bad, you know, the space fascists, or you get into some situation where, you know, the knives come out. And so my friend Ian put together this setting and was running games in it called Kadita, where it's set on a dwarf planet. So like a picture, like a big asteroid or a really small, you know, moon, where there's a domed city, it's cut in half, and the company controls half, and it's, you know, libertine, but very unequal, you know, society there. And the other half is a socialist republic that's fought the company, and they've got half the city. And there's a big wall down the middle that's actually polluted by, you know, quantum radiation. We call it the hell science. So this sort of magic analog in the game. And so that area, the span, is this haunted demilitarized zone that's really cool. And so basically this setting was it's a Cold War, but it's kind of a detente situation. You know, nobody wants it to be a hot war again, because, you know, it's 10 years after this really brutal war the company fought with the people on the planet, and a lot of people died. So they don't want to do that. Nobody wants to do that. So it's really a setting where you're doing spy work, you're doing detective stories. There's a lot of weirdness, you know, eldritch stuff, maybe, you know, just beneath the, you know, it's a mining planet basically, right? So who knows really what's underneath this planet that's almost completely valuable metal. Basically, that's why people want this city. And, you know, it's just a great setting. I thought Ian was brilliant to come up with it. He came up with whole new classes for the game too, which is great. So there's 10 classes in the core rule book, sort of six normal ones and four we call the freaky four, who are kind of the caster equivalents. They have, you know, they're dying of nanite poisoning, which lets them essentially you know, reduce stuff to goop by like vomiting out nanites and all these these great sort of vampiric images. And the hell science, there are these tremulants, these essentially psionicists who've been engineered by the company, who are just, you know, their mind is opened to dimensions we can't see. So you know, he added another four classes, which are sort of spies, which are very specific. You know, one is a demolitions expert, the cherub. So sort of someone who seems like they're an engineer, they're going to help you build stuff, but really they're there to sabotage, and they have all these powers around blowing stuff up and explosives. And so that, you know, it added unique elements to the game in terms of, you know, the setting, but also some new mechanics that we really liked. So we decided to publish it, and that book is coming together. We're mostly done writing it, and the art's finally coming along. I think I sent you some of that, Shane, and people will be able to see it on our, you know, pre-launch and our Kickstarter page. Yeah, so we're just excited, you know. So as of this taping, you know, we're going to launch June 20th. So if you're hearing this shortly after, you know, please check us out and check out Stillfoot. You can also get the core rule book through this Kickstarter because obviously, you know, it's a new game, so we want to just make sure people have the rules.
I really like that. I really like that idea. I'm kind of excited about this. There's some cool stuff going on there.
I have a question. Is there a bard analog, like an entertainer class?
Yeah. So in one of the main classes, and this is again kind of a mechanical thing we're proud of, is a class called the Witness, who's listed as kind of the anthropologist, linguist, diplomat, translator who can end combat. So that their power is they can smooth over the situation, and narratively, you know, then it's up to the GM to sort of justify why fighting stops. And that's been really useful because it could restart, right? But at least makes a pause in combat. So it takes you out of that mentality of grinding initiative, you know? In that class, definitely people have played as also like, I've played kind of stand-up comics, journalists. Yeah, so I love that kind of trope, like you're describing in your game, Christian. I mean, I think that's such a fun idea of like you get caught and that's the whole point. You're going to sort of talk to the villain or whatever and learn more. And you're in a dangerous situation, but also that's you're trained at it and you have these skills. So there is also an NPC, you know, we give examples in the core rule book of like, well, you could have a courtesan and that's basically pulling powers from other classes, but it's sort of a stripped down version of the Witness where, you know, your job is you're some kind of entertainer, you're somebody's, you know, pet jester or whatever. And I think mechanically, again, our game's meant to be really all that. It's a flat hierarchy of power. So you can easily make new stuff by saying, okay, well, this class, I'm going to pull a couple powers from here and a couple powers from here and give it a new name. And it doesn't break the game in any way. You know, it works just fine. So
I just like hearing that phrase, a flat hierarchy of power.
Yeah. But anyway. Well, the immediate thing that came to mind just based on the description was, you know, Berlin.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and so how do I play Iggy Pop?
Oh, what a great question. Yeah. I mean, that's actually a good provocation. I might have to talk to Ian. Maybe we'll throw in, you know, but I think mechanically it's like, we already have powers in the Coral book. Again, there's a class, the Jackal/Mouse, the sort of thief class, right? Where you're a stowaway, you don't actually have a job with the company, you're pretending, you don't have real papers or whatever. And their base power is called con, which is you just convince someone of something and they believe it. And again, narratively, it's up to the GM to justify. It doesn't have to work forever, but it works in that moment. And that power has been really fun to play with where, you know, again, it can kind of get someone out of a sticky situation, at least momentarily. And I could imagine Iggy Pop just rocking so hard or, you know, entertaining someone using it in that same way where, you know, using kind of music or being a badass to kind of change the tone, change the vibe of a sitch. But yeah, I mean, yeah. I think spies, you know, didn't the CIA have a lot of famous people as spies back in the day?
Oh, like, yeah.
entertainers and stuff. Yeah.
So we're coming up on time for our last segment. And in our last segment now, what we're going to try to do is we're going to talk about something on the edges. Here's a lot of people complain that I talk about political things on the internet. So it's at the end. It's going to be the last 5 minutes. So if you like the games and you don't want to hear all the other stuff I throw in there, you can turn off the podcast now. But if you're interested to hear what Logar is going to talk about next, hang in there. Hey, there was a theme I've noticed between the two games at times, and a theme that I've noticed in games, and that's talking about the political elements of games, politics in games, etc. And this is something we've talked about quite a few times. And there are people that have complained about a politicking game, but I've kind of pushed that. Even in naming the podcast and stuff, there was a political, what's the word I'm looking for?
Agenda?
Yeah, there's a political agenda in doing said thing. So, politics in games. Christian, any thoughts on that subject or concept?
I mean, it's the whole complaint is just laughable. Like, the most obvious thing is just everything is political, and if you don't think it is, it's more political just because all you're doing is supporting the status quo at that point. You're still performing a statement there. But even beyond that, without like if you actually can manage to strip all politics out of a game, what are you left with? Like Pac-Man? Like, even that, you can say the maze is like some kind of a metaphor for capitalism or something.
Hey, you've got the ghost versus Pac-Man. I mean, there's a conflict there. There's a politic to that.
Really, like, your demons that are chasing you through the maze, it's Sisyphean. You know?
And you're just trying to consume more and more and more.
And
never satisfied.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, I think it's unavoidable. And I think that it's best to just lean into it. And honestly, like, I'm going to write what I'm interested in anyway. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if I'm writing for me, it's going to have that in it.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say, you know, games as a whole are inherently political, especially group games. If you have a group of people together, politics are going to enter into it in some fashion.
Yeah, and people decide as a group what the decision they're going to make is, and like morals and like, you know, like actual ethics will play into it, and actual like self-preservation and everything, and making those butt heads is always interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, I think to your points, Christian, like games always have a politics, like even Pac-Man, if the game experience isn't really that political, at least without the metaphor, you know, somebody made the game, and so there's a politics to making it. But especially when you have complex games with people, whether they're realistic or super heroic or whatever, there's a politics there. And I think one of the issues with games up to the modern era has been a lot of games pretending that there isn't any politics to, okay, we're going to go kill all the goblins or all the bad people, and kind of sweeping that under the rug and not interrogating it. And I think, especially as I got older, like as a kid, it's one thing. You're like, yeah, let's go mess up these goblins. Mm-hmm. But then you get older and you're like, wait, why are we killing all these goblins? Like, what's the deal with that? And I think it becomes more interesting to think through some of the politics of what your character is doing. Just like in real life, you have to kind of make choices. So I think the game allows us to explore different kinds of scenarios, whether, you know, utopian or dystopian or whatever, that we don't encounter in real life, and also make different choices where in real life, you know, maybe we don't feel we have a lot of power. In the game, it can be empowering to, like, you know, do something positive, try to change society. So I think you can, as a designer, you know, engineer those narrative structures, those moments, and think about it, and build fun things out of that urge. So I think there's a lot of adults out there who want to play games that are political. I'm sure some don't. That's fine. They don't have to buy our stuff, but, you know, there's...
Yeah, no, they've got plenty of stuff to buy.
Yeah, exactly. They can go kill goblins. I mean, totally fine.
There's a lot of games in the world right now. We're about on time. Before we close up, I want to know, Christian, can you tell folks where they can check you out on the internet, where they can follow, find out more, where they'd be able to pick up Longshot City, and a little bit about where they can find you on the internet?
Yeah, so the Longshot City is currently, as people are listening to this, going to be mid-Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. So, you know, head over there and pledge. Take a look at the deluxe version. It's fucking sweet. I do actually have a blog, but I haven't updated it since, like, 2019. Like, my last on there was when I was first starting to work on Longshot City. I might start posting again, who knows. It's popularenchanting@blogspot.com.
I'll make sure, if you check, we're going to be posting I'm going to have a post up with the links to everything we talked about here. My plan is, while I'm editing, to make sure every single one of those links is put in there and written up, so it might make the editing process a little longer, but we'll see. Why? Can you tell folks where they can check out, because Stillfleet's out there as well already, and then there's also the Kickstarter. Tell them where they can find you online and check all that out.
Yeah, man. I mean, you can go to stillfleet.com. We're much more active on Discord, and of course we'll have the Kickstarter up, so if you go to Kickstarter, you should see or be able to find easily. You can look for Stillfleet. You can look, the new book is called Kadida. It's the name of the city, Q-A-D-I-D-A. And hopefully, like you say, Shane, you'll hook us up with some links. And we really love, we're pretty active now, starting to be more active on Twitch, showing off the game, you know, that way, just because, again, people like it. It's not something I would normally do. We really like playing with people in Discord. So Discord's a great way. Even if you haven't played, if you haven't bought the book, there's a free quick start. And we're very friendly. We like to think we have a very friendly, you know, server. So that's a good way to kind of get involved. And yeah, we're trying to get the word out that it's a cool system. And, you know, especially, yeah, if you're vaguely into kind of political sci-fi stuff, this is the setting, you know, for you.
Blue?
I am able to be found on ye old internet, anywhere that Mark Zuckerberg has touched, as that blue wizard.
Excellent. And you can find us our online. Our blog is hoboscollective.com is our site. I am on Twitter and still there. I'm not leaving yet. Twitter and TikTok and Patreon @LogarHaleCrom. And as always, keep those dice rolling.